and welcome to Room Temperature Suite, a Fecking Bahamas podcast. I am your once and future host, Chris Walker.
And I am the other host of the show. Santino didn't think of a nickname, even for the second take, Tartaglia.
And that's okay, because we need to move on to some housekeeping before we even get started. So we want to lay out the general outline for this podcast so people will know what they're getting into. Because if you're listening to this now, well, in our temporal time, then it's pretty close to release date. But if you're listening to it in the future, you'll probably know what the deal is. But for all of you early adopters, I guess we just want to give you a heads up so you can jump ship if you're not down with what we're into.
Yeah, so we figure that there are other news shows. So we wanted to create a new show of our own, but it's more of an editorial show. So more like opinions, experiences, about new stuff as much as possible.
Right, so we're not aiming to be a review show. There are plenty of other great publications you can go to if you want to hear some hot takes on the new stuff, but that's not what we're about. We want to engage in a broader narrative that surrounds math rock, so obviously we'll talk about new releases, but we want to talk about being part of the math rock culture if such a thing exists. So things like live shows, like writing music, like listening to it in front of your friends for the first time, which is usually a horrible, daunting experience, and everyone laughs at you, and then you don't have any friends afterwards. But we want to even cover things like the experience of reporting on Math Rock.
Yeah, but we also want to hear from, you know, professional and amateur acts alike. We want to hear from other writers, but we also want to hear from you guys, just our regular listeners. I don't think we ever expected that we would be able to handle this topic by ourselves. We were really hoping to get other people to contribute stories and experiences and, you know, write in with stuff.
Right. This is going to be a huge community effort, and we're hoping to involve you guys as much as possible.
Yeah, so we'll talk about how we can get you guys involved at the end, because we kind of didn't really want to front load it with a bunch of stuff. But since it is episode one, we should probably tell people who we are, right?
Right. So I'll start. I'm Chris Walker. I write for Fecking Bahamas, and that's mostly what I do. I do reviews, and I do a couple of feature articles here and there. I joined in, I want to say it was 2013 or 2014. Biggest thing I did recently was I edited and published Daz Cook's book, How to Be in a Band Your Parents Will Hate.
Yeah, and I'm Santino Tartaglia. I'm, you know, after you say all that stuff, this is going to be really underwhelming. I'm your friend who you're basically teaching about math rock to.
Right. You're just a regular dude.
I'm not a writer. I mean, I've been in bands, I've been to live shows, I do all that stuff, and as far as which we are local to Rhode Island in America, for anyone who's not in America, and obviously I'm into that scene, but that's it. That's all I got for math rock here, right?
Yeah, so we're hoping this is going to be a learning experience for him, and maybe you guys can come along for the ride.
Speaking of which, you wanted to show me two bands?
Yeah, I have two new releases for you. Actually, one is a new release, and one doesn't come out for about another month. So the first is Jean Jean, and they are from France. You guys have probably heard this one already, but if you haven't, you can go pick it up on Bandcamp right now. The album is called Freud Pierre. Okay, so that song was called Limerence, and it was off of the album Freud Pierre by Jean Jean. And I'm really sorry if there's any French listeners out there that are listening, and I'm completely butchering this because I don't speak French and I have no experience with it whatsoever. So I'm probably getting these names totally wrong, and I'm very, really, really, very sorry about that.
So, like, just like really, really quick, really important thing here. Behind you, big old Canadian flag. You're talking to a French boy right here.
So did I get that right? How is my pronunciation?
I mean, on a scale from like my mom would say it to I would say it, that's how I would say it.
All right, good. So yeah, this album came out on February 23rd, 2018. It's eight tracks. I think it clocks in around a half hour, if not a little bit more, but it's a pretty standard length. And if you haven't seen it yet, the album art is absolutely gorgeous. It's just this like pure black background with just this like hunk of melting ice in the center. It's hard to describe. It's really, really cool. And they have an excellent looking vinyl to match.
Yeah, you obviously you showed it to me last night when we were going over the show notes, and it it looked really cool. So I guess you guys wouldn't know this. I hadn't listened to it. I'm not going to listen to any of the things that he's going to show me on the show. He just shows me one song. And fortunately, I got to hear the beginnings of a bunch of songs as you were just kind of clicking through. And it had a pretty good amount of like gloom that I was hoping an album with that kind of cover would have.
Yeah, for sure. They definitely nailed the whole look and feel of it. The whole thing feels really cohesive. This is my first time listening to Jean as well. I didn't listen to either of their previous two releases, which there was a self-titled, and then there was an album called Symmetry shortly after that. But this is the first thing I went through and previewed that stuff, but this is the first thing I actually really, really sat down and got into.
I couldn't tell if those were real drums or if they were electronic drums. I was a real sucker. There's just a fucking, you can just hear the clicks of the sticks on the snare at the very beginning. That fucking got me. Like right there, I was like, oh, I'm in for this.
Yeah, I think they use a mixture of electronic and acoustic drums. I don't know what that balance looks like. And it's kind of embarrassing, but I often can't tell. Like when something toes the line like that, I'm not sure like what's programmed, what was played on a synth pad, what was like electronic and what's just sort of like sweetened in the mix. I have no idea. And I think we're in like a really cool space, like someone like Adam Bett. So he is the drummer from Three Trap Tigers and one of my personal favorite drummers. So these guys remind me a lot of Three Trap Tigers. But what they sort of focus more on, Jean, that is, sort of focuses more on the texture and the ambiance and the overall feel of it. Whereas Three Trap Tigers, you get more of an emphasis on technicality. But all that aside, so Adam Betts his setup is, I want to say like 50-50 acoustic and then like synth pads. And it's always insane to just watch what he's able to do with that and sort of how he mixes that sound. And at the end of it, you're like, if you're trying to separate in your head, like, okay, what is like real and what's fake? Once you see it, you're like, it doesn't even matter anymore. So the next thing I want to move on to is a band from Japan called Locto. I think that's how you pronounce it. It's Lokto. I've never heard it said. I've only read it. But this is an album. I don't know if it's been announced yet. I'm pretty sure it has. I think I saw it along with a tour announcement. They're on tour with Gulfer in Japan right now. And I'm pretty sure they use that to sort of also announce this new album called Geo. It is not available for listening, so I'm pretty sure you can't even preview this, but we're just going to give you like a super far look, heads up. Right now we have an unmastered version, so I'm going to go ahead and play that for you. Okay, so that was the first track off of the new album Geo from Locto, which I'm not actually sure if I can even say the track names because this is some pre-release stuff. So I don't know how much they want us to say. So I'm not going to say the name of the song.
I mean, looking over your shoulder, I don't know if you could say the name of that.
Yeah, it kind of came through this pre-release material. It just looks like how you would maybe name a song, like how an engineer would just title a song on his computer or something. So I don't even know if this even is the real name of the song, but we'll know at the end of March.
Okay, cool. Because this is coming out at the beginning of March, so this is still applicable.
Sweet. All right. So what did you think?
Okay. So I don't mean this in a bad way, but it reminded me of Toe.
Yeah.
Which I mean, I love Toe and always want more of it. So that's not. There's nothing bad about that. But I got the same vibes. I had the same. Had the same clarity, had the same like depth of instrumentation, I guess you'd say. And I would see myself coming back to that on the same, for the exact same mood that I would
right,
be in.
Right, right. Yeah. And I think there's, it's kind of like a twofold or maybe even like a threefold issue where it's reminding me of Toe and it's reminding me of Tricot also.
I can see
which
that.
I think you've listened to Tricot before.
Yeah.
I think we made you listen to Tricot before.
Not only did you make me a little...
We just locked you in a car. We forced you on a long drive to listen to Tricot against your will.
Up. We'll talk about that at the end of the episode, I'm sure.
But yeah, what I think is doing that is, especially if you listen to that snare sound, it's something that used to really bug me, but it's growing on me a lot. And it's this super ringy snare that kind of sounds like a basketball hitting a hardwood.
Okay. I didn't notice that, but
it's got this like long ping to it. It's got like a sharp attack and this really long sort of, it's got a ring to it, but it's not irritating. It's got like a lot of character. So that's something that you hear in Toe, and it's something you hear in Tricot. And I have no idea if these people have like the same producer or they went to the same studio or whatever. But all three bands sort of have that same snare sound. And just as a note on sort of like the mood of it, it has this really characteristic like optimism and earnestness that I find in a lot of Japanese bands. And I don't know what that is, but nothing about it seems snarky or ironic or like they're doing it like for a joke. Like, well, that stuff can be fun. Like, I listen to a lot of bands where they kind of do stuff as like a little tongue in cheek, but this seems absolutely completely upfront and forthright, and there's something really endearing about that.
Yeah, if I had jumped in to cut you off, the thing that you're talking about, that optimism, that's called happiness. And
what's that like?
Yeah.
I haven't experienced that before.
Yeah, as someone who's known you as long as I've known you, yeah, I can confirm you don't know what happiness is.
I don't feel that. So that's enough about that. Those are the two albums that I have for you this month. Yeah, we're probably going to do this on like a monthly basis or whatever.
Yeah.
So I guess we're going to dive back into more explaining what this podcast is about and how it's going to work. So essentially, we're going to try to have like two different stories or segments that we can cut away to that'll make up the bulk of the show in the middle. So we've got two different stories today. And the first one is an interview that I did with Daz Cook of You Slut fame.
And I want to let me pop in. One thing that I didn't mention was that I'm the person who records and edits and does all that stuff for the show.
Yeah, and producer.
Yeah, but where I'm going with this is Daz's audio didn't come out great.
No, yeah. So we live on a different continent than he does. Mm. So it was for one tough to coordinate and get a time when we would both be awake to do this interview.
I'll be upfront with you guys. We had technical difficulties that were really on me. As soon as we went, something crashed and I couldn't get it to run, and we literally just got him on FaceTime, and it was like, I'm not going to sit there and make him wait for like 15 minutes while I fix it.
Right.
So we jumped right in and I had to use some other stuff to record. So I apologize in advance for that.
Let's get into it. Okay, so please introduce yourself and say how our listeners might know you.
My name's Daz Cook. I used to be the drummer in You Slut. I'm now the multi-instrumentalist in Panji and the Buffalo, and also wrote the book How to Be in a Band Your Parents Will Hate, which was published by you guys.
And it's been how many years since You Slut disbanded?
Well, we called it quits in 2013, after being together for 10 years. And then we came back to do the shows with Maybe She Will, which was four shows and then four shows of our own, which was in 2015 into 2016. And then we called it quits again after that. So essentially, we've been broken up now for 4 years. So, yeah, it's been a while now.
So what have you been up to in the meantime?
Well, since obviously the band broke, I did the Panji and the Buffalo EP, which was essentially completely me, which was fun. Totally different way of writing. But obviously doing that, I've been doing the In Here Brothers as well, which is the covers band, 90s dance covers band with my friend Gaz. And I'm in the process of recording a debut album, which is just sounds a bit Elliot Smith-like. But I've not really been doing as much kind of math-based stuff apart from the Panji stuff since, really. I think it just kind of came to a natural end for me.
Did you, now you mentioned you were working on a debut album. Is that going to be under the Panji and the Buffalo name, or is that just going to be under your own name?
It's going to be under my own name, that. I mean, it's completely different to math. I mean, I know I kind of touched on it in the Panji EP with some acoustic-based stuff, but this is more, I guess, singer-songwriter-based stuff as well. But I'm not ruling out doing another EP Panji-based, because I actually really, really enjoyed writing that. And it went down really well, and people seem to enjoy it. So it is something I'm hoping to revisit at some point, but I've not really got any plans to do it as yet. I think it would be easier for me if I'd have had a band with me to tour it. But obviously doing everything myself meant that I kind of released it and then couldn't really back it up with any shows. And I suppose it kind of suffered a little bit for that. But I think if I do another EP or album, I'm going to write it, hopefully, with other people.
Yeah, what I wanted to circle back to was you mentioned how writing it by yourself was very different. I mean, tell me a little bit more about that. What was different about the process? Because I know that if you're in a band, if you have five people, then you tend to feel almost compartmentalized. Like, you know, you have your job, and as long as you're doing that, things are going smooth. But you're responsible for everything from A to Z for this. So how was that different?
Well, I mean, with You Slut, a lot of the songs were kind of, I would come up with a basic idea on the guitar. I mean, I was the drummer in You Slut, so I used to come up with an idea on the guitar, and I'm not the best guitarist in the world, but I'd have a basic idea and I'd take it to a practice, and we'd all kind of have a go and come up with new ideas. And because the songs were so complicated, I suppose people added their own things to it. I think what really helped with You Slut was the fact that we all had totally different musical kind of backgrounds. We all liked totally different bands from each other, and it really kind of worked for us because one of us had come up with an idea that was perhaps a bit jazzy, then someone came up with an idea that was really heavy, and then whereas doing it on my own, I suppose you haven't got anybody to kind of go, how does this sound? What's this like? And also, you're doing things bit by bit, so you're not kind of jamming with somebody. So you haven't got a drummer with you to do it. You haven't got a bass player with you. So you're writing things. You're laying a track down and you're going, what works well with that? And it's a totally different process. I found it difficult, but I also found it quite rewarding because from my point of view, I do love jamming with a band and I do love that kind of building a song up and kind of, you kind of get a look from people where it's like, oh, that looks great, that works well. And with me and with the Pangy stuff, I didn't have that. You know, I basically wrote the songs and then went, I think that works. And the first time I heard it all come together was recording it. Well, I recorded it at Snug with Richard, used to be in You Slut. I came up with a lot of the drum beats on the spot, really, I suppose. It was kind of like, oh, I think that works, and several takes, and then we kind of found the best take on each one.
Did you find that in the end you got a handle on that level of control, or did it just end up being more pressure for you?
I don't think I ever got a handle on it, but I think it worked in the end, albeit obviously in a totally different way to You Slut. But I think, you know, I'm really happy with that EP. Especially with the acoustic tracks I recorded on GarageBand, literally using the microphone on my iPad. I didn't even have, you know, it was the built-in microphone. And those songs really came naturally to me. I just picked up an acoustic and went, well, that works well. Added some sort of electric drums and bass. And I found those tracks really easy to write. The actual sort of more complicated, mathy live ones were definitely harder. And what really didn't help me was the fact I wrote them quite a long time ago and then totally forgot what tunings they were in. So when I came back to actually have to write them, I had to try and find old videos on my phone and then stupidly hadn't written down or said what the tunings were. So I had to really painstakingly tune my guitar to what I thought they were and relearn them again, which was fun. And I think I kind of got them to how they sounded originally. But I think it was it's definitely rewarding in the end for me. I think kind of as soon as the CD came, I kind of unpacked the CD and it became more real to me. But I suppose I did it via crowdfunding, and obviously quite a lot of YouTube fans kind of get money towards that, and so therefore there's a bit of pressure definitely on me from that, because if people have given you money, it's got to be good, it's got to be what people expect it to be, it's got to be similar, I suppose, in some respects to You Slut. And so I had that in the back of my mind quite a lot, I think. And the acoustic tracks definitely not, but the four tracks that are heavier, I suppose it was easier for me because I usually came up with the ideas guitar wise for You Slut, so it wasn't as though I'd never picked a guitar in my life before and tried to copy what we did. It's one of those like presets for me. If I pick up a guitar, a lot of the stuff I write is not in 4/4, so it's one of those things where that wasn't hard for me, but I did feel the pressure with the crowdfunding side of things. And it took me quite a long time to finish the EP because I was being very perfectionist with it.
It took a while for I know we got that first track. I mean, how long is it? It was a year or 2 years before we got the full.
It was the first track I recorded was in 2015, which was Tanio, which I just did that off my own back with Rich at the Snog. Then I did the crowdfunding from that, and I did another track, which was Bubbler. And then I found it really difficult to write. I wouldn't say I had writer's block, but I suppose then with the crowdfunding kind of coming through, I suppose then the pressure did sort of pile on me a little bit. And yeah, I found it really difficult to kind of finish the EP off. And then I went in and recorded the last two live tracks and realised I had four songs, which all in all lasted 11 minutes. And when you've had that much money given to you, and also you've got a record label saying, not sure I can release an EP that's 11 minutes long. Yeah, it took a long time. I mean, it's 2015 when I finished the four live tracks, and then it was August 2017 when it was actually released. So it was 2 years, and you know, I had people kind of coming to me saying, is this ever going to be released? You know, and it was, but I was looking for the right label as well. I mean, that was the other thing. For 6 months, I didn't want to self-release it. I wanted to have a really, really good label on my side. And that took a few talks and things, and eventually found Reckless Yes, which is a Derby-based label. And they were fantastic, absolutely brilliant. They loved it. They promoted it like mad for me. And the only thing I regret is that, like I said before, I couldn't do it live and promote it a little bit more myself from that end. But it's still done really well. And I, you know, I've really enjoyed all aspects of it right through from writing it, recording it, and releasing it, you know. So, but yeah, I did take a long time to release it.
Yeah, it's, I mean, from the live show angle, like you said, you know, it's just, it's really tough to get people together and, you know, teach them these songs. And it's not like you wrote it with the intention of, you know, just putting something on a loop and being able to play all the instruments by yourself live, like someone like that guy Girlfriends used to do back in the day. You know, he would write these songs that are very, very loop based, and so that he could go out and just throw on a loop and then throw on a bass loop and then jump on the drums. And, you know, he's got a 3 minute song essentially. But what you do is a little bit more complex than that. You know, it's, you're not just setting a loop and letting it go.
I don't think any of the bars of the, you know, obviously there's Steve Strong as well, another absolutely awesome artist. And he does, you know, I mean, he's ridiculous. I've seen him live and he's absolutely brilliant. But I suppose his songs require the drum beats to be fairly similar all the way through, the guitar lines to be fairly similar all the way through. Whereas with the Panji stuff, it very rarely goes back to the original sort of idea. So it kind of keeps developing and developing and developing. And it's almost impossible. You know, I could probably do it, but it'd take me about 20 minutes to record everything beforehand. I think the crowd would probably get a little bit bored of that, I think, because it's so long to actually get it all looped. And so yeah, I suppose there's enough people in Derby where I am who are, you know, the Crash of Rhinos lot from Derby, old band Cable, who are my heroes growing up. There's so many great musicians in Derby, so there was enough people I could have asked. But I suppose it kind of got to that point with me where I've finished the EP and I thought, I can do this, or I can kind of come back to it and have those songs to do later on, but have an album to back up with it. And I think that's what I'm going to do with it, really, rather than kind of keep playing those 8 songs, which only do actually clock in at about 19 minutes. It's better for me to just do another album, and then I can dip into that in the back catalogue and get the right people in, rather than rushing it to get a band together to back up the EP. I felt that would have been a bit half-arsed, I suppose, to do it that way. I wanted to do it a bit more naturally. I wanted to feel more natural rather than forced.
Yeah, and I think the EP as itself, it works as a great proof of concept. You know, I mean, it's familiar enough where I think everybody who listened to You Slut is right on board with it, even if I think some people were surprised by those 4 acoustic tracks. I know I was, but I mean, at least 2 of them ended up being some of my favorite tracks on the EP.
That's what I wanted to do, really, because I suppose from my point of view, I mean, You Slut's been such a massive part of my life. You know, I mean, it sounds cheesy, but it did change my life, really, I suppose, from the respect of how we started and where we started to where it ended. You know, never ever in a million years expected what would have happened. So I suppose from my point of view, when I did do the Panji stuff, I didn't want it to be too similar so that people kind of went, it sounds like you're almost ripping your old band off. And that's why the acoustic tracks, to me, were a good way of doing it, because it was a way of people going, there is another side to this, but it also keeps that same formula and it keeps that same feel. And that was important to me. I just didn't want to do 8 tracks that could have been on Critical Meat, you know, which would have been, you know, some people would have absolutely loved that. And I suppose I would have really loved that as well, but I didn't want that to be, you know, I didn't want people to kind of look at that and go, it's a little bit too similar, I prefer You Slot. You know, and that to me is kind of, I wouldn't have found that disappointing, and I totally understand why people would have thought that if that would have happened. But you don't want to put yourself in that situation. You want to kind of do something that's a bit out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, it's tough. You don't want to necessarily draw those comparisons, because you don't want someone to, like you said, just go back and prefer the old stuff, you know, when this is, you know, you're moving on to something new. But I think now that you've got the EP down, I think if you wanted to do a follow-up album, you know, with a full band and turn it into a live experience, I think that would work incredibly well, especially now, because you can put it in front of people and say, you know, this is the idea, this is the concept.
You know, and also, if I was going to do an album, like I said before, I think I'd want to do it more in the old way and jam it out. And I want people to come up with ideas that I can, you know, relate to and start playing along to as well, rather than kind of doing. So I think sometimes if you take songs to other people, it's stifling their creativity. If you play them a song on a CD and go, I want the drums to sound exactly like this, and I wouldn't say that anyway, but people would probably feel that they had to play the drums like that because that's what people know. People know the bass lines to be like that. And I think that's a little bit I'd find that a bit stifling. If I joined a band and they were like, okay, here's an album, play it note for note like this. I want it to be a bit more kind of, this is the drum beat that I've come up with, I'm going to play it that way, this is the bass line that they've come up with, I want to play it that way, this is the guitar line. That for me is a much better way of doing things, because it feels like their band then rather than being my band, and I never want it to just be Das Cook's band. You know, that's never what I want. I'd want to do a band where everybody feels like it's theirs.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've filled in for people in other bands before. I've joined bands sort of halfway through, and you know, if they have material written, like you said, it's you don't feel that ownership over it, you know, because it's already there, and either they have a strong preference or they don't. But if there's something there to start with, you almost just feel like a studio musician at that point. You feel like you're just sort of stepping in to provide, you know?
That, especially in something like math, where it's one of the most creative forms of music, you don't want to then suddenly go, this is what you've got to play. Because, you know, it's a really, a music for feel, isn't it? I think, and it's a music where you bring your own nuances to it. And if you don't have that, then it's not as much fun, I don't think. I don't think I'd enjoy joining a band and having to play everything the way it is.
So what made you decide to come back to writing music after You Slut ended?
Every time I pick up a guitar, it's quite natural for me to write riffs and things that sound a bit You Slut-like. And, you know, when I sort of going back to when You Slut first started, there was only three of us in the band at the time, and I came up with a riff for Rufio Shoots, Rufio Scores. It was a song I'd had knocking around for a long time, and I think it was the same with Panji, where some of the ideas, I suppose, that were on the Panji EP were probably going to end up being You Slut ideas at some point if we hadn't broken up. They weren't there at the time that we broke up, but they became Panji and the Buffalo. And it seemed a bit of a shame, I suppose, because we had a fan base and people were, you know, asking us, are we going to come back? Are we going to play more shows? There was always that kind of market there to kind of come up with new ideas that people are going to enjoy if they enjoyed You Slut. So I suppose it was kind of, when these ideas came, it was a bit of a no-brainer to not release them and for people to kind of hear different sort of style, but similar to what was there before.
I want to talk about the book that you wrote. How did that come about?
Well, I mean, it started off really weirdly because I wrote the chapter, which I think was the one that you guys sort of saw first, which was the chapter all about how to write a math rock song. And I wrote that because lying awake in bed one night, I was just thinking about how we used to write math rock songs. I couldn't stop thinking about it, so I actually got my phone out and started writing ideas down in my notes on my phone. And then one day after work, I was sort of walking home and I was carrying on writing it and stuff, and it became, I guess, a chapter. I didn't expect it to be a chapter. The idea was never to write a book, but I ended up putting it up on You Slut and on our YS official page, and people really liked it. And I suppose, you know, to people, even if they write math rock songs themselves, it's quite interesting to relate to how it is to write a song like that, because I suppose not everybody knows what it is to write a song like that. So it was one of those things where I wrote the chapter and I really, really enjoyed doing it. I guess it came naturally to me. So then I thought to myself, hold on a second, I could do a whole book on this, starting right at the beginning, forming your first math rock band. And there's so many possibilities of chapters in there. And I suppose there's the two parts on the tour in which I wanted to write the book to be math rock based, but I also wanted to write it so anybody could pick that up if they're in any kind of band and go, God, I can relate to that, or God, that rings a bell, you know. And I suppose that's what it came, really, the book. It was never intended to be a book. It was intended to be a witty chapter on how to write a math rock song. Yeah, it kind of blew up, really, and I really enjoyed doing it. So
yeah, I remember during the editing process passing those chapters around to some other musicians that I know, and it just hit so close to home for every one of them. Most didn't know whether they should laugh or just cry themselves to sleep.
That's what I wanted to do, like I say, because writing a math rock song is, it's math rock based, isn't it? You know, but then when I started to carry on writing it, you know, doing your first math rock gig, apart from the word math rock, it's doing your first gig. There's no doubt about it. You know, that feeling of coming away from doing a gig and it either being the best gig you've ever done or the worst gig you've ever done. I can relate to that in bands when I used to be in just rock bands, you know, and I know so many people have come to me after their first ever gig and said, God, that was absolutely shit. And I've gone, I bet it wasn't. And it's because you've got this heightened expectation. So from my point of view, I did write it. Yeah, it's a math rock based book, but no, I think anyone can relate to it. If you've been in any band and you've written songs and you've toured and you've released an album and you've gone through bad spells in the band, you can pick that book up and go, yeah, I can relate to that. Well, I hope so anyway. I mean, I think a lot of people did. I took experiences not just from You Slut, but from bands right back when I was 15 years old. You know, I think everybody's got different experiences, but they're all very similar.
Yeah, and I think you hit that out of the park, you know, even for people who aren't in math rock bands. Even just because I think people still have this sort of high expectation of being in a rock band that maybe came out of the 70s and 80s that, you know, you play one good, you know, one good gig, you get seen by somebody, and then you just rock it to stardom, and it's all, you know, drugs and sex from there. But being in a small band, I mean, even U-Sled was huge by math rock standards, for sure. You know, it's like one of the top recognizable names. And I mean, even you guys were still, your experience was so much different than what people think about if you say, you know, I play in a band. It's nobody's written that narrative as far as I know. You know, nobody's gotten that deep into it. I mean, there's been journalists who have sort of danced around it, but without actually, you know, any experience. But having someone sort of on the inside and being able to bring all that out to the forefront, and even if it's only musicians who read it, it's, you know, I mean, that's, everybody is going to nod their heads in agreement the entire way through.
Yeah, and I think, it's really weird with me, I suppose. I really like reading about narrative from somebody that, I suppose, you don't know what their band's like, but you read about like their worst ever gig, or you read about their worst ever experience, but then you read about their best ever gigs and the best ever experiences, and I think people can relate to them. And the touring chapter for me was the chapter that I enjoyed writing the most, because touring always, I think, like you say before, with the 70s kind of the curve of, you think it's two or three gigs and then you suddenly sign to EMI and you're huge. And I think when you say to somebody, I'm going touring around Europe, and people say, oh God, that sounds amazing. And it is, it's absolutely brilliant, but it's a full-time job and it's hard work. And apart from doing the half an hour to an hour gig, there's so much traveling, there's a lack of sleep, your diet's just terrible, you're drinking far too much. You know, and I think it was trying to make people realize that, I suppose, especially in the touring side of things, that it isn't just all fun and games, and it isn't all kind of like, oh yeah, you have the best time of your life. You do, but you also at times have the worst time of your life. You're in the back of a transit van for 14 days and, you know, you're bound to fall out with people. And I wanted to kind of make people aware, oh, you know, it's not done as a warning, it's done as a kind of, this is what it's like. You know, I'd never want to put people off doing that, because for me, it's the best times of my life is doing that. But it's just making people aware that what it really is like, I suppose. And that's what I really enjoyed doing, was trying to pass on a little bit of knowledge and a bit of wisdom, I suppose. But also, I wanted to make it witty and something that people could have a laugh at and go, God, I can relate to that.
And what really struck me is there was this optimism about the whole thing. Like, I remember reading, there was sort of a tour account from somebody who traveled with Don Caballero. I think it was on their last tour. And it was just like watching a train wreck in slow motion, because they were all sick of each other. You know, they've been doing it for so long, and it was just falling apart at the seams. And it was sort of a different exercise. You know, you're watching this band fall apart. And in your case, it was not so much that, it was this more holistic view where there's a lot of good, there's a lot of bad, and there's a lot of sort of neutral ground in between.
It'd be so easy to write a book focusing on negatives and focusing on the train wreck side of things. But I also would love to encourage people to try it themselves and experience it. I mean, you know, I think, I'm sure you've seen it yourself, but the film Anvil, one of the best films, music films ever, about following the band Anvil. I don't know if you've seen it. There's a part in that where they've got a new tour manager and they turn up to a train station and they've got the whole platform's full of equipment, you know, whole drums, everything like that. And they've got to pack it onto a train because they've not organised a van. And for me, it's that kind of, you know, it's an absolutely fantastic, funny, brilliant film, but it's got that element and kind of edge of, it's quite sombre in places and it's quite sad. And that's what I wanted to do with the book, was kind of make people go, it made people laugh, but also made people kind of sit up and go, you know, this is what it is like and this is what people do experience. But it shouldn't put anybody off, and it shouldn't stop people from wanting to do that. Because like I say, I've had some absolutely amazing times on tour, and I've got some of the best stories from being on tour. But on the flip side, I've also experienced some pretty bad lows of being on tour as well. So I wanted to make the book really balanced, really funny, as funny as I could make it, but also really serious in places, and try and make people enjoy being in a band, and from start to finish as well. You know, not just the touring side of things. That chapter was the easiest for me to write. Just write from the very beginning and write your first album is another one that I found quite interesting, mainly because Critical Me, the first use of the album, was written very differently, I think, to a lot of math rock albums have probably been written. So I suppose I had to take a step back from that and kind of think what it's like for other math rock bands. But I think I touched a bit on that chapter, definitely.
Now, we published this book digitally as a series on our site, and that's currently the only place you can read it. Do you have any plans for a physical release?
Yeah, I would absolutely. I'd love to get that released in physical form. I really would. And if I was going to do it, I'd want to do it with you guys, I think, because you guys were brilliant and you published it. And it really got out there, didn't it? And I think people, you know, I had some absolutely lovely comments on my sort of Facebook Messenger from people saying how much they could relate to it. And it made me realise that, it is a book that I hope is important to people. And I suppose that's why I would love to do it in a physical form. I'd love to kind of, you know, get it out there for people to read, I suppose, and have on the coffee table or having a bookshelf and kind of go, I'll have a read of that, or I'll lend it to somebody. And I suppose having it online is absolutely fantastic. And you know, the illustrations were absolutely brilliant as well. And I love them, but I would love to get it physical form as well.
Awesome. So I think that's going to do it for us. Anything you think our listeners should check out before you go?
Yeah, it's on Pangea in the Buffalo Bandcamp site. You can buy the EP. I've still got the EP available if people want to get the physical copy. You can download it. Uslot, same. You can find us on Bandcamp. And also check out the In Here Brothers, which is my covers band as well. There's loads of stuff on YouTube. There's loads of stuff on Facebook.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Good luck. We'll see you again.
Hey, all you listeners. Do you guys play video games? Chris, do you play video games?
I've been known to play a few.
Yeah, so a little bit of bad news is when you asked me to host the show with you, I thought, yeah, I could do that. I'm a funny guy. I'm charming. I know how to talk. Have you ever played Jackbox games?
Once with you.
Yeah. Specifically talking about that maybe a few weeks back. Played that Quiplash. Found out I'm not that funny. Our friends are way funnier than me, and maybe just being around you guys, I had an inflated ego about what my humor was, so going forward, just want to apologize. I'm not as funny as I thought.
That's all right. I'm sure we can all forgive you, but to wash ourselves of the filth of that last embarrassing admission, let's listen to Nick Hunter talk about Breadwinner.
Hey everyone, this is Nick Hunter, editor and creator guy for Fecking Bahamas. And as part of the Room Temperature Suite series, I'm going to be presenting Math Rock Archives, documenting some of the early pioneers, innovators, and game changers of math rock history. And for this first installment, we're going to be looking at a trio out of Richmond, Virginia, one of the most influential bands in math rock, Breadwinner. Now, it's impossible to talk about Breadwinner without incorporating the history of guitarist Penn Rawlings, who was essentially the brains behind this project. Some of Penn's earliest material was with the post-punk band Honor Roll, formed in 1983. The band put out a string of releases through the 80s, including the Purgatory and Judgment Day EPs in 1985, and the full-length LP The Pretty Song in 1986. Honor Roll's sound fell nothing short of loose and morose, featuring slack guitars and pretty bleak lyrics delivered in the raw, abrasive vocal style of Bob Schick. And it's hard not to hear what would be the distinct sound of Breadwinner in Honor Roll, with tracks like Early Grave, Salty Tears, and Skippy. Penn Rawlings was writing riffs that were discordant and angular, and he was using the full extent of his fretboard. But by and large, Honor Roll was a post-punk band and with a well-established following in Richmond. Now, as Honor Roll were recording the album Rictus in 1989, Rawlings was putting together another band called Butterglove. Butterglove was undoubtedly a heavier shift for Rawlings, featuring plenty of palm-muted, abrasive guitar riffs and really rusty bass lines. Most importantly, this is where the early components of math rock can really be heard. You've got discordant riffs, unusual time signatures, and unconventional song structures. So Butterglove would never really follow a continuous melody. Penn Rawlings would innovate on the melody, disfiguring it as the song progressed. The music, almost entirely instrumental in nature, was unpredictable and impossible to bop your head along to. We'll be right back. Now, Butterglove only dropped one release, The Lunchbox Drama, in 1989, as well as a live rehearsal which was released posthumously as The John Moran Session in 1997, so much later down the track. So it was only a short-lived stint, and by this stage, Honor Roll was also coming apart. Penn Rollins at the time is quoted as saying, Honor Roll wasn't really seeing eye to eye anymore. I don't think it's anything personal. Honor Roll just wasn't really breathing anymore. A year later, Rollins got together with bassist Bobby Doan and drummer Chris Farmer to form the trio that would be Breadwinner, and quickly released three demo tracks in that year. In Breadwinner, as with Butterglove, hardcore and metal sensibilities pervade the material. You've got thrashy, low-frequency guitar tones, plenty of heavy breakdowns, and an all-round aggressive, heavy demeanor. The band would release two 7-inch singles, 232 South Laurel Street in 1990 and Side A in 1991. In 1994, Merge Records released all of their singles and an EP as the renowned posthumous collection Burner, which has steadily become the go-to release for this band. In 1992, Chris Farmer was leaving for Germany, and unfortunately the band couldn't really make things work out without him, so they eventually disbanded. Bobby Doan joined local Richmond act Le Bradford and would go on to become a film composer, while Rollins eventually formed the band Loincloth, which is a searing blaze of math metal riffery. In fact, the 2017 release Psalm of the Morbid Hawk comes highly recommended. For many listeners, it was Breadwinner that shone out from all of Penn Rollins' projects. Their off-kilter and unpredictable form of heavy music would later become a typical example of the evolving term math to describe music bearing rhythmic complexity. And this is not to say that Breadwinner were founding fathers of math metal as we know it, as it was around this time that bands like Cynic, Atheist, and of course Meshuggah were all pushing metal to new dizzying heights of complexity, dissonance, and virtuosity. With Breadwinner, however, Penn Rollins and company were deconstructing and rewiring the bare bones of the music. It was not a sound of excess and lavishness, it was a sound of deformity and mutation, and this is what made them unique. On the math spectrum, Breadwinner forged a more aggressive and distortion-heavy style of math rock, borrowing from hardcore and metal motifs. It's a style that appears throughout early math rock and mathcore history, with notable acts like Craw, Keelhaul, Colossalmite, Canute, and Dazzling Killmen, but also contemporary acts like Bodyhound, Maritech, Roland, and Town Portal. What Breadwinner did was essentially kickstart the process of scrambling and disfiguring the routine and repetitive nature of rock music, a sound that Penn himself was making in Honor Roll. And it's for this reason that Breadwinner hold a place in the math rock history books.
What a whirlwind of facts and opinion.
You know, for all the opinion that Nick might have put out, I think a lot of it was backed up by stuff.
That's fair. So now we're going to move on to something that I hope will be a regular segment, and it's called Inbox Zero. So if you're not familiar with that concept, it's the idea that you can get to having nothing in your email inbox, and it's this wonderful, freeing type of feeling where you finally feel like you have nothing left on your plate and nobody's waiting for you to respond. So we're going to try and do that for us. So we get a lot of submissions, mostly people sending stuff into our Facebook page, which we definitely look at all the time, and I promise we actually read all the messages you send us, but none of us do this as a full-time job. So we all have regular jobs aside from this, and we can only dedicate like a little bit of time to this every week. So we can't cover everything as much as we would love to. So we're going to try and do that in audio form.
Yeah, I think when you pitched this to me anyway, the feeling that I got from it is we wanted to, things that we didn't cover on the website, we wanted to at least mention anything that we could. So right. You and I spent time separately from each other just going through and picking things that people sent in, and we'd listen to it. This isn't supposed to be Fecking Bahamas' official stance, or this isn't an in-depth review, but we just wanted people to know that we're listening. We didn't want them to think that we just told them to piss off, basically.
Right, yeah. We don't want you to think we're ignoring you when you send your band in and we don't respond to you for a couple months, and then you send us another message and say, hey, we recorded another album. Could you cover it this time? And we don't respond again. We're not doing it on purpose. So this is kind of our way to signal boost all that stuff and let you know that we're listening, and at least just get it out there so people can hear it. And I really want to make it clear that this is not meant to be an all-encompassing review. This is just our first impressions, and it's mostly just to put stuff out into the ether so that people can hear it.
Yeah. So let's jump in.
Llueve. Is there a D in there? That's so... What is this?
So Chris is on Google Translate.
I'm on... I found a pronunciation video on YouTube.
Llueve.
Llueve, yeah. All right. Llueve en la montaña?
Yeah.
All right. It means rain on the mountain. And I am very sorry. We're white people who don't speak any other languages but English, so this is all going to sound really fucking backwards and terrible when we're trying to pronounce these things. We can't do it, so we're sorry. And if you can tell us how to pronounce these things, and if we're just being ignorant pieces of shit, please, please yeah. Write in and let us know.
Yeah, we're trying to be as aware as possible that we aren't worldly dudes.
First thing we're going to talk about is Llueve en la Montaña, which is a band from Colombia, and we're going to be talking about their EP. So it is 5 tracks long. So overall, I thought this had really nice riffs and good tones. I kind of appreciated the DIY feel to it. It's really emotive and sad and energetic, and I felt that that lent itself well to that. It like made me believe it more. One thing I wasn't crazy about was the male vocals. They sound really strained, and I agree that it could be someone's thing. It's just not my thing. I know a lot of people are into that sort of feel. It just doesn't personally do it for me. The female vocals, that was a nice change of pace.
Yeah, so I agree with your point on vocals. When I read your notes on this before I listened to it, I was actually really excited because I usually like that kind of thing. But somehow it didn't resonate with me either, which was kind of a bummer. But other than that, right after I listened to the EP, I happened to watch a video of them on YouTube, and it was them recording this, or at least that's what it looked like. So props to the fact they recorded the whole thing live, which was pretty cool.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah. One other note, we had a short discussion during the listening of this. There's some cool horns in there that I never noticed, and I just wanted to shout that out if there's anybody that's like a fan of brass fans. So the next thing we want to shout out is Manuel Tenchio. It's called Assload.
Or is it A-S-S-L-O-A-D?
I guess it's both. But this is a solo project from Uruguay. This guy's a really, really talented guitarist. So there are a lot of great riffs here. Now, I could be biased, but I'm not crazy about program drums. Some beats are really cool, like on track 4, which is called Avi Avedan's Speech. I thought that had some cool beats, but it would be really stellar if he had a drummer. Overall, it suffers from feeling a little bit too artificial occasionally, and it doesn't walk the line very well like someone like Mylett's does. It's a little bit too Steve Vai or Joe Satriani for my taste as far as tone goes, but I do have to say that track 2, It Comes Back Eventually, is beautiful.
So my notes are essentially identical to yours, so instead I will quote our good pal, Crispy James.
Friend of the show, Crispy James.
Friend of the show that he doesn't know exists. He would say that he fucking loves this, but it's too sterile for me. And that's where I fall.
So next up, we're going to talk about Ciudad de Brujas by Jan, and this is a 3-piece from Buenos Aires, just to keep with our South American theme. This one was super laid back, unaggressive. Sounds very much like Don Caballero on occasion, kind of the way that they have these multiple concepts arising on their own, and they slowly coalesce into this greater whole. It's got this loose and roomy sound. It's super easy to just fall into and miss all the cool stuff that's happening. And I got to say, I was consistently surprised by what was going on. There's like way too much happening at any given time to even come close to covering in this short format. So go listen for yourself, because this one is super good.
Very agreed. I guess the only thing I can really add to it was I liked the bass. No, the bass sounded good. It was mixed. It was mixed in a way that it stood out to me more than other bands do, and I really appreciate that kind of thing.
For sure. And on top of that, the album art's super cool too. It looks like something that Godspeed You Black Emperor might do if they had a graphic designer and not just like an artist like in a hovel somewhere covered in sheepskins making all their album artwork. Which is how I assume they do things.
I mean, it's pretty punk rock to do that.
Yeah, totally. All right, so next up is the song Last Call Baby Doll by Fuzzy Weekends. And oddly enough, this one was sent to us as a video, and we just didn't get a chance to premiere it or share it or whatever. So later on, when I was looking for the video, I found the album or EP, whatever, that it came off of, and the video has vocals. The song on the album does not have vocals. So if you go and search this one up on Bandcamp, the EP is called Where Are Your Keys? You will not hear any vocals in the song we're about to talk about.
So I only listened to it via the music video. I actually really like the vocals. I think now that I've heard both versions, I love them.
They were nice. They add something to it, definitely. Like the song is good for sure, but those vocals, they just add like another dimension that I think it really needed. Mm. And it, you know, when I initially listened to this, I sort of put my initial thoughts down all based on that with the vocals, which were really cool. And I'm really sad to see that like the EP version doesn't have them.
Yeah, so I actually really, really enjoy this, kind of like I just said. So the song itself, now that I've heard it with vocals, it actually has me really excited to hear more things from. The vocals kind of reminded me of like Circa Survive meets like Bright Eyes, which maybe some people think of it as a negative thing, but it was like a good amount of emotion and talent is really what I'm trying to say. But since it was sent as a music video, I want to say one thing about the music video, and it's that it felt really claustrophobic. Like the music itself, very chill, very cool. I really liked what was going on. But then there'll just be these cuts, and the cuts felt maybe too fast. Like whenever I see video editing, I like to see it maybe to the timing of the music or to the flow of the music, and some of the cuts were not that.
Yeah, took you out of it.
It took me out of it. But if we're just talking about music, it was excellent. I fucking loved it.
Yeah, if you are a fan of Chan or Pliny or Strawberry Girls, this is going to be your jam. Even if you like Minus the Bear or Sharks Keep Swimming, it's got that kind of vibe in the same way that Minus the Bear in their early career like just talked about partying and living the high life. That's kind of, it seems like, their vibe. Like they describe themselves as fist-pumping party math rock, which is so far not a descriptor that I've ever seen, and I dig it. I don't know if I would describe it that way, but I'm ready. I'll go for it, sure.
Oh, my God. My hand's been in a fist the whole time. The whole time we've been talking about it.
I guess it's an accurate descriptor then. Right? All right, so next up is Aeon or Eon by Kusanagi, and they are an instrumental band from Liverpool. So this one, it's got a super like vaporwave or cyberpunk kind of feel to it, right down to the cover and stuff. These a lot of synths, so that really helps. It feels dark, futuristic. It's really, really polished and clean. Kind of like 65 Days of Static, maybe.
Mm-hmm. You keep going?
There's a little bit of Three Trap Tigers going on, which is cool. That sound works really well, like in track two, Memory Reflector. And Santino is now holding up the vinyl version of the No Man's Sky soundtrack, which is really cool looking.
Yeah, listening to this, it just reminded me so much of 65 Days of Static. And I mean that in the best way, because I fucking love 65 Days of Static.
Yeah. But yeah, this one, going back to the thing that we're actually talking about, this one, I think it grew more on me as it went along. I just don't think I connected with the first song. It's like, it's 10 minutes long, and it's got this like minute long sort of lead in. And there's this robot voice that I just am not down with. I just can't abide this robot that's talking to me in track one.
This song hit me good. I could come back and listen to it, but I like all that kind of stuff. So
yeah, this one, if you do decide to check this one out, be aware, songs are like 11 minutes, and I think the average is like 8. So you're just, you know, prepare to sit down, and don't do it if you don't have the time. Don't do the time if you haven't done the crime. I don't know where I'm going. These words rhyme.
So the next thing that I wanted to talk about is actually a band called Goldbloom.
Yes.
It is Fawning. That is a... I don't know if you'd call it an EP. They're calling it a single that has a bonus track. I would agree. So it was actually released in September of 2017, so we're getting to it pretty late.
Sorry.
The first song on it, title track, it's got high energy, it's loud. It makes me want to be at a live show for this. That seems like it'd be a really exciting venue to be at. The vocals started a bit weak for me, but I got comfortable maybe halfway through the song. I was grooving at that point. The second track, truthfully, did not really do anything for me. It's a song called Tomorrow. It had been previously released by them. It sounded like an acoustic version of a Nirvana song, but I did not have the built-in familiarity of a Nirvana song.
Yep.
So nothing. It didn't click.
I feel you. Yeah, I immediately got Nirvana vibes off that second one. And I don't know if it's just that because we're all so just steeped in Nirvana all the time that we just fucking deal with it or what. Because I like Nirvana. I like them just fine.
I wasn't sure what you were getting
at. I can't tell you why. Hot take. Nirvana's all right. but yeah, the first song, it's funny that you mentioned that you'd like to see it live because when I was listening to it, all I could think of was these guys could open for Envy on the Coast.
Yeah, I can see that.
Like my experience of Envy on the Coast was seeing them live. I think they opened for The Fall of Troy in like 2009. Yeah. And I had no prior experience, and that to me is like the best way, like to just be shoved headfirst into a band, is to experience them live like that.
Yeah.
So I think these guys would work out very much the same way. Like they could totally. I feel like we could have seen these guys open for Fall of Troy, definitely.
Yeah, it would have been a good time.
But they got two other EPs, Real Nice and Go Figure. They seem like they're kind of doing the short EPs and singles thing, which is cool. That works for some people.
Move into Chubacore.
Let's move into Chubacore. This is EP Volume 1. As it's called, by Chubacore. These guys are from Buenos Aires, Argentina. Very, very lo-fi. It's got a super DIY feel. And the reason is, as we found out from a quick Google Translate, this was recorded live directly onto cassette, which is some wild shit that I've never heard of before.
I mean, it used to happen back in the day, but that is not what... It's not what you would do today.
I wouldn't call it the industry standard, no. I mean, I know that's kind of like some people's jam, so take my comments with a grain of salt if this is your jam, but I think this could be killer if it were tighter and had more polish. Like, if it actually... It could really, really benefit from taking the time in a real studio and high production, but that's just me. That's, you know.
I mean, you're definitely not wrong. I'm a sucker for lo-fi shit, and the guitar tones in this, they just punched me right in the face. And it was really awesome. Go listen to it. Just go listen to it.
Yeah, especially because I don't know what the deal with this band is. I can't, like, find anything on them. Their EP is hosted by their label on Bandcamp, and their Facebook goes right to the label's Facebook, and they only have, like, 200 followers. So, I mean, if you want to get in on the ground floor, now's your chance. So, up next is self-titled by Catherine Baseball. Now, this one came out in October of last year, so we're getting there. We're getting a little bit better, a little more timely, I think.
We're sorry.
Sorry. So these guys are from France, and they have this really cool sort of Midwest emo-inspired vibe going on. There's a lot of cool rhythm, nice stabs going on, so you kind of feel like throwing your fists around and punching stuff, but in like a really gentle, caring kind of way. The lyrics are pretty sing-along. It's laid back, it's twinkly, so if you're into all that jam, this one's got some fun passages. If you like sport, they sound a lot like sport.
It actually kind of reminded me a lot of the band Haikus as well.
Haikus.
Yeah, so if you're into that kind of stuff, I would check this band out. That was pretty sweet.
I'd say they're probably closer to Seahorse Divorce than Sport. Sport's got like a more like a New Jersey punk feel.
I think it's a little insensitive that you would talk about a Seahorse's divorce.
I know. It's too soon. So that's it for Inbox Zero. That's all we had time to get to this month. I'm sure there's more stuff piling up in our inbox, so we'll see you next month when we try to inch ever closer to sweet, sweet Nirvana.
Ooh, good callback.
Anyways.
Yeah, so this month, something that you alluded to earlier in the show, I actually did a cross-country road trip. I had to help someone move cross-country. We were towing a U-Haul trailer behind us, started in Arizona, ended up here in Providence, Rhode Island. And let me tell you about how Math Rock treats you on the road. Let me give you that.
Tell me about it.
So Based on listening to your interview with Daz, some of the stuff that we cut out, I think it actually falls right in line. Listening to Math Rock on the road is awful. It only brings bad luck. Let me tell you about it. It seems that in Texas, someone will steal your wallet, and then you won't have money to fund the rest of the trip. It seems that in Mississippi, you will find a stray dog, and when you get the cops to finally come an hour later while it's snowing, they'll tell you that they want to abandon it because your only option is a kill shelter. When you get to Nashville, all of the hot chicken places are going to be closed, and then you'll have to leave one day early to stay ahead of a storm. From driving all the way from Nashville all the way to DC. But let me tell you, I listen to Tricot, I listen to haikus, I listen to American football, and none of it helped. None of it helped.
So there you have it. Math Rock, bad luck for road trips, good luck for fucking? Maybe. Yeah, probably not that either. So if you're familiar with our most recent compilation, if you saw our Facebook post, we're going to be putting out our seventh compilation, Portugal. What do you know about Portugal?
The man or...
Yeah.
Literally nothing about either. I was going to make a joke, but I realized I know too little about... You know what I know about Portugal? One of my friends is Portuguese, and he is a hairy fella.
Insensitive. But... if you want to learn more about Portugal, you can do so sometime soon. We don't know when it's coming out, but it's getting close. And there's a lot of bands on there, and they're all really good.
I actually haven't heard anything of it. Have you gotten to hear it yet?
I've gotten to hear a few. I'll just get tracks as they like come through, like what's being selected. And gotta say, this one's going to be a banger for sure. Let's move on to the end of the show.
Right. So going forward, we probably won't have as much of an info dump here, but this being episode one, I kind of wanted to call back to, we have to make a few calls. We have to kind of let you guys in on how we're trying to structure the show, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So basically the music that we used at the intro and the music that we used in between the segments, that's something that the intro is probably going to stay the same, but the little bumps in between, we're trying to make that something that you guys send in. Like, we want, like, as bands send stuff in, we want to use it here. That's our goal.
Yeah, because the biggest goal for us, the biggest, like, mission is just trying to get more music out there and get it in front of more people. So send us your band. If there's something we can use for, like, a five-second bump music, we'll put it in there. We'll plug your band at the end of the show. We'll send people to your purchase links and whatever. So yeah, it's just another way for you to get your stuff out there.
Yeah, and maybe we should have mentioned as well that this whole show, I mean, I don't know how you guys found it, if you found it on iTunes or wherever, but on our website, fakingbahamas.com, we do have a landing page. And on that landing page, everything that we mentioned, the link to get to it, to listen to it, to buy it, it'll be found there.
And there will be links to other stuff that's not even really related to Math Rock. There's going to be some fun stuff in there. You should go check it out. If you're not already on that landing page listening to this right now, and if you haven't been clicking through the link dump, go check it out. It's going to be at feckingbahamas.com. That sounds really weird to say with an American accent, I'm sure, but I'm still, it feels strange on the tongue, and like it.
Yeah, fucking Bahamas there.
Yeah, it works better if you don't sound like a fucking American shill, you fuck.
Oh, wow.
Anyways.
Okay, jeez.
So send us your music. We can't pay you. I'm very sorry. But we'll use it.
Speaking of unpaid, so earlier we also mentioned that we wanted this to be a community show, mostly because we want to learn more about what you guys experience, but not just in America, everywhere, all around the world. So if you guys have the ability to record, or if you guys are like on the ground, or if you guys have ideas for stories, just anything that you guys can come up with, we would like you to send it to us. We would like that to be emailed to us. We can help you guys record. If you guys can only write a story, we'll help you with all that stuff. We don't want to be the only ones covering stuff. We don't want only our opinions.
Yeah, anything you can do, any ideas you have, any pitches you have, even if you want to just write a whole story, that's great. Do it. Even if you can't, you know, produce a whole radio segment, we want to hear from as many people as possible, and we want to make this as diverse a show as possible, because we have our view and our opinions and what we think makes a good show, and we're sort of boxed into this one worldview we have, and as much as we can expand that, we want to make this a show for everybody. Let's roll into the end of the show with what you should listen to this month, and on the docket this month is Dios Trios' new album, 2.
So you told me to listen to that a month ago. I only listened to it yesterday.
Yeah.
Not only was that entire album fantastic, I had it on Spotify, so it went right into the next album. And I went to turn it off. I was like, all right, I heard the whole album. Now I can talk about it. My girlfriend, she was at work at the time, my partner. My partner, she complained that I turned it off. She went, no, please leave it on. Like, I want the rest of the album. It was fucking great.
So there you go. Dios Trios, your loved ones will ask for it by name. And these guys are right in Westboro, Massachusetts, which is like less than an hour away from where we are. So Dios Trio, if you're listening and you want to come hang out with us.
Yeah.
Hit us up. We'll hang out.
Yeah. Let's talk about what we have been listening to this week.
What I've really been getting down to this past month. I would tell you that I finally started listening to Melvins, who refer to themselves as either Melvins or The Melvins, depending on the album. Specifically, I've been listening to A Senile Animal. So I never listened to The Melvins before, and I'd always heard it floating around, and it never, like, grabbed me. And I started listening to this because it was covered on a podcast I really like called Super Context. And I was just floored by it. It's so, they have two drummers on this album, and it's fucking awesome. It's like really, really heavy. This is not math related at all, but you should definitely go check this one out because I think you'll dig it.
Yeah, and so what I've been listening to this month, actually the past 2 months, I am gonna butcher the pronunciation, but it is an Icelandic fella, Junius Meyvant, album Floating Harmonies. It is, I don't know how to describe it in any sort of math terms, but I would honestly say it reminds me of adult contemporary.
Like Celine Dion?
No, more like Ray LaMontagne. Would that be adult contemporary?
Sure.
Okay, yeah. If this came on while you were at Home Depot or at some other hardware store, you would go...
Try again.
What did I say?
Home Depot? I don't think it would be at Home Depot.
I can tell you where you would definitely hear it is you would hear it. There's an Icelandic indie rock compilation, album number 3. One of the singles off of this song has made its way on it, and you would definitely hear it there.
Good plug. Mm. Good plug.
Honestly, it makes... We've been going through our winters. So it's a very depressing time.
Mm.
This has taken me out of my funk. This has been carrying me through, keeping it positive.
Keeping it positive. Would you say they would play it at Anthropology?
What is that?
It's a store where you buy clothes and maybe some home goods.
I don't know.
They have a lot of shelves that are made from, like, reclaimed wood, and they have track lighting.
I mean, maybe. I don't know. I've never been there.
And that's all we have for you this week.
It is.
Month. That's all we have for you this month. We're probably not going to do this on a weekly basis. This is way too hard.
Yeah, we'll do this on a weekly basis.
That's dope.
You
can't promise that.
Yeah,
I
meant to say monthly. Sorry, I was reading ahead of the show notes. Sorry about
that. It's all right.
That.
The only thing left on the show notes is just to fucking close out the fucking show with my cool radio voice.
Room Temperature Suite is produced and hosted by Chris Walker and me, Santino Tartaglia. Nick Hunter is our managing editor. Additional stories this month contributed by Chris Walker and Nick Hunter. Our theme this month is Mom's Cobbler by Fight Cloud from the album Simple Structures. Exit theme is Rocket Lightbox by Fight Cloud from the album Where's My Shakespeare? Bump music this week has been provided by the band Zaynoise. The song has been Kyle Desertile. Find links to everything that we mentioned and all the music that you've heard at this show's landing page at feckingbahamas.com. You can read our other articles, interviews, videos, and tons of other content at www.beckingbahamas.com. Email us at roomtemppodcast@gmail.com. This entire episode was recorded in my basement in the sad, rainy state of Rhode Island.